Welcome to the Hot Stove Society Show on Cairo Radio. My name is Tom Douglas, super grandpa this morning because I became a grandfather at 4:30 this morning, and I'm very excited about it. My daughter and her husband, Benjamin, have not chosen a name yet for this child, so we're going to go with my name, which is Hercules. And so if you want to know Hercules' theme song, because you know every baby today has a theme song, just go onto Google or YouTube and look up the Hercules 1963 cartoon and play the theme song, and you'll know that this kid is destined for glory. So, Chef, what's your news today?
I think it's a great stage name. I love it, especially if he's going to be a wrestler. I mean,
yeah, why not?
Hercules wrestler is like absolutely, the two go together really well.
And he's also my favorite character in Hamilton, Hercules Mulligan. So there's a tie in there to my musical past and future.
My name is Thierry Rotiro, the chef in Hampton. I'm at home and happy to be at home. I would rather be celebrating with you right there, drinking that beautiful Prosecco you're drinking. Mm-hmm. Instead, I'm drinking some other champagne, but anyway, I have Luke in Madison Valley, 28 and Madison, and we're doing obviously to go, and we're doing menu box to go. This week is vegetarian for those interested, and next week as well. So the 2 weeks of vegetarian. We just came out of a vegan week. There were two vegan weeks that were very successful. So we're keeping in the same path, except we're adding that cream that I love so much and that butter that I can't live without.
Maybe a little cheese.
Well, that too, but I was going to wait a minute to say that.
I don't want to overwhelm people.
No, you know, trying to make everybody happy.
Yeah, exactly. Chef, you know, I miss having you here because it always reminds me of when we used to do our show live at Cairo and come out of there and go have trashy prawns at the Lunchbox mm-hmm. Laboratory over there in the Cascade neighborhood. Cascadia, I think it's called. And today, after the show, I'm heading down for a weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, of trashy coconut prawns at Seatown Restaurant, our place in the north end of the Pike Place Market. And my little extra is that I've this summer, Jackie grew these beautiful hot peppers, hot chilies, and I have blended them with some of my Chinese 12 spice, a little sesame oil, a little rice vinegar, and some fermented mung bean sprouts, the Chinese fermented black beans. And I have a beautiful black bean sauce or a mango sweet chili sauce to go with my trashy coconut prawns, and a lovely shredded green mango salad with lots of herbs and fish sauce and deliciousness. Mm,
are not trashy anymore. What's going on here?
If somebody wants to come down and join me this weekend, I'll not only be shucking oysters, but I'll be cooking trashy coconut prawns.
And your mango Mai Tai.
And my mango Mai Tai, don't forget.
I tried it yesterday. And? It's so good.
But good. Is it better than the bend and snap? You know, last time I did this, I did the bend and snap.
Yeah,
and people didn't get it.
Yeah, I think it's better. It's really tasty.
Well, the bend and snap was tasty,
it's a
too.
Great
what
name.
Are you trying to say?
Great name. I like
hey,
this
Tom,
one better.
Can you get those to go?
Yes, of course. Everything's available to go in the age of COVID. This is your 2 hours of COVID-free zone, though, so we're not going to talk about that part. Thierry, on the show today, we have Brad Parsons, our buddy who used to be at Amazon, yeah. who moved to Brooklyn, has written a couple of books. This is his third or fourth book now. So Brad is going to be here to talk about dive bars. I think that Palace Kitchen might have made his list when he was a regular at the Palace Kitchen. You know, Palace is kind of a dive bar, but in an upscale way. We're going to talk about meatball fantasies. I do. I fantasize about meatballs. Mm-hmm. So I've often talked about naming a restaurant the Meatball Fantasy. So we'll see if that comes to pass and how well our pop-up is going to go on National Meatball Day. We have 43 questions. That's for Tom and Terry. Terry was up last week. I guess I'm up this week. Taste Washington is happening. You know, we do this every March. We're proud to be a supporter of it. Our Washington grape farmers are hugely important to our agricultural scene in this state. And so sometimes we forget that wine is farming because it's just so darn delicious. And it makes you kind of crazy. Chef Aaron Versosa of Archipelago is here to talk about the James Beard Foundation's Taste America. You know, Aaron's restaurant down there on Rainier Avenue is where Loretta and Benjamin got engaged. Did you know that? Yeah, they brought out the ring from the kitchen, I guess, or something of that nature.
Wow, cool.
Yeah. And lastly, we're going to play the Rub with Love Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge. It is it's a fun time had by all winners. The winner gets a surprise package of different rubs and sauces from our Rub with Love line, and we're excited to finish up the day with that. So hang with us. It's two full hours. We're here every weekend, and we're excited about that. Excited that you joined us, whether you're in your garden, your kitchen, your car. Thanks for being with us. Okay, Chef, you're made of a vegetarian box this week. What's your favorite taste that you've enjoyed this week?
I made some homemade curd. I tell you the truth. I was on my last crust of your pizza in my freezer, and I didn't want to just. I didn't have any other cheese that in the house that I could go on the base of that. So I just made a quick overnight cheese curd. But in my cheese curd, I put apple peel. I had some apple peel. I just peeled an apple. I'm like, I'm going to put the apple peel in the milk.
Of course you did, because that's what everyone does with their apple peel. They put them in cheese curd.
wait, I'm not finished yet. And then some fresh chopped thyme and, of course, some lemon. And I put that in my fridge in cheesecloth, let it go overnight. And it made this beautiful. The apple actually released a beautiful flavor in that curd. And I used that on my pizza the next day. Obviously, I removed the peels of the cheese curd in the cheese curd. And I used that on the pizza with some sauteed mixed mushroom and some caramelized onion. And I'll tell you one thing, it was a very simple. Oh, I also had a little bit of sage that I put on top. Mm-hmm. It was so delicious. It was really good. My next thing is, I obviously sent somebody shopping to Metropolitan Market to get some more pizza. They don't have any more pizza crust, Mr. Douglas.
You know, they're selling like crazy at the Met Markets, and we've been trying to keep up, but we're up to 300 to 500 a week now, and that's a lot of pizza crust. And so we make them right in our wood-fired oven, so it just takes time, and we'll get more there. Believe me, we'll get more there.
Just letting you know, your inventory is at zero.
I'm just going to take 30 seconds on my taste of the week. You know, I was ranting and raving about how much burger I got in my cow that I bought at the farm. We bought half of our neighbor's cow. I don't know what they did with the other half, but we got half. Ended up with over 200 pounds of ground beef, which isn't my favorite cut of beef, I would say. And so I took one of the many suggestions you all sent in, our listeners, and made a shepherd's pie this week with a delicious root vegetable mash on top. So I made kind of like the mushroom and ground beef and gravy kind of thing, and then put the root vegetable mash that had parsnips, celery root, and Yukon gold potatoes in it, and baked it all with some of my smoked paprika on top. And it was delicious. So thank you for all your suggestions. I'm going to learn how to be a ground beef lover, just so you know. Up next, we're going to get Brad Parsons on from Brooklyn, New York. We're going to talk about his new project, the Dive Bars of the World. On Cairo Radio, it's Tom and Terry, Hot Stove Society, 97.3 FM. Okay, welcome back to the Hot Stove Society show. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
And Terry, we got our pal Brad Parsons back. He's just waking up in Brooklyn. That's what they do in Brooklyn. You know, it's 12:30 in Brooklyn time. And they kind of sleep in because they're hard charging all night long at the rave scene, whatever that's called. Well,
especially with Brad and his and his bar scene, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So Brad Parsons is the author of Bitters, A Spirited History of a Classic Cure-All, winner of the Jane Spirit Award, Amaro, A Spirited World of Bittersweet Herbal Liqueurs, The Courage of the World's Most Spirited Mousers. I don't even know what that is. And Last Call, Bartenders on Their Final Drink and the Wisdom of Rituals at Closing Time. I have a good chef buddy that had a last call. I was my most favorite ever. And at the bartender would give the last call like at 15 minutes until 2 a.m., right? And so they got 15 minutes. So my chef buddy would say, give me two bottles of your cheapest white wine. And they would literally, this is at the end of the night, they would literally be gone by 2 o'clock. So
I know who that is, Tom.
Yeah, I know you know who that is. I'm not going to say who that is, but that was my favorite last call. It's like, oh, my God. Brad, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's really good to talk to you both again. I miss you guys very, very much.
When do you plan on getting to Seattle again?
Yeah, there was, like everyone, there was no travel whatsoever last year. And I've been plotting a lot of travel for the book I'm working on now. And I just had a call with my publisher this week about moving it out yet another year because it's just not, I just don't think it's realistic, that kind of non-essential travel. It keeps moving. The, you know, the goalposts keep moving, but you're definitely be one of the first cities I want to come back to. I used to get back there at least once a year, and to stay at the Andra and run into all you guys and have a great time.
So we'll do a little class here at the Hot Stove.
Yeah, absolutely,
exactly. So tell us about your new project and maybe how your other books are doing and some of your favorite experiences you've had in the last year or two or 10.
Yeah, we got to catch up. Yeah, well, as you mentioned, my last book was called Last Call, and it was sort of my love letter to bartenders around America. And I embedded myself with photographer Ed Anderson, who shot your Dahlia Bakery book. Mm-hmm, He's a great guy.
Yeah.
So we traveled most of 2018. I think we went to about 83 bars, many states, many cities. We did like 12 cities in 12 days and one haul. So we were having, it was a tough time, but essentially, you know, the hook was, you know, what would your last drink be? But through that question, it opened up so many interesting stories and being at bars at night, it's a different side of, for civilians, you know, last call is bad for the guests. Like, oh, we have to go home. But for the bartender, it's this transitional period. And so it became sort of meditative. I was getting older, so a sense of mortality and like it, being on the road wrecked me. And then I did this big book tour in 2019, and then suddenly, you know, the world sort of stops and all these bars are closed now, and at least five bars in the book are permanently closed, sadly. But the book took on this kind of time capsule tone, and the best part of it is getting these great emails from bartenders saying or people saying, this made me feel like I'm back at the bar. You know, thank you so much.
Nice.
But from that, working on Last Call, there's several dive bars featured in the book. Ernestine and Hazel's in Memphis, Tennessee is one, a legendary haunted juke joint of a bar. And those were some of my favorite experiences. And it got me thinking about the next project. And dive bars were already endangered species, you know, so to speak, closing for, they're a lot more family owned and it's a matter of gentrification or rents going up and different reasons why they're closing. And then suddenly they're all closed and many aren't coming back. So like I say, I'm not able to go out there and do that travel right now and visit all these places, but kind of, I have this super long list of the places we want to go to and getting a lot of feedback and writing parts that I can, and actually, it's kind of last March, March 1st, I moved into a new place in Brooklyn, and I'm actually live above a bar now. I live above a famous dive bar near the waterfront, and I have this big neon sign out my window, and I figured if anyone could handle that, you know, I could. And then Frank McCourt lived here back in the 80s, so it felt like it had good literary juju. And then it's kind of sad that neon sign's been off now for coming up on a year. So I try to live and breathe these things. But Dives would be my fifth book. And like I say, it's still going to come, but originally it was going to be fall 2022. And now we're going to push it to 2023. So it'll be worth the wait, hopefully. But yeah, otherwise, you know, I'm freelance writing for various outlets about bars and spirits and trying to keep busy with, like everyone else, virtual classes and talks and seminars on, I do a lot of Amaro talks and things like that. But yeah, so trying to keep busy with the hustle and they always say it's hanging in there is what I've been up to.
Chef Terry.
Hey Brad,
yes.
What's your favorite cocktail right now?
You know, I have like a small bar's worth of inventory in my apartment, and I never really drank much at home because I was making up for it while I was out all the time. But I would say, you know, I do love the Negroni, you know, like in Last Call, they asked me like, if you had to say, like, what's your favorite drink? If it wasn't a beer, a Negroni. I just love that drink for so many reasons. And, are you a fan?
Yes. I've had it many, many, many times. I love the Negroni. I think it's, you get it. It's one of those drinks and you do get it in different shape, or different fashion in some ways. Sometimes it's too syrupy. Sometimes it's too, alcoholy, and I think there's a right balance, especially with the ice in it, the ice cube to roll in it and make it really chilled. I think it makes a big value to me. But yeah, a good Negroni, when it's done well, it's got the right unctuousness on your tongue, the right alcohol and the right sweetness to it. When it's well balanced, it's beautiful.
So, Brad, tell people how you make your Negroni.
Yeah, so a Negroni is hard to mess up on paper because it's three ingredients. It's gin, Campari, and sweet vermouth, and it's equal parts, you know, 1:1:1. That being said, people do tweak the ratio. They might dial up the gin to 1.5 and or do a 1.5, 3/4, 3/4. The gin should be, you know, traditionally a London dry style gin, something very juniper forward. And then the Campari is bitter, herbaceous, with a little sweetness to it. And then the sweet vermouth brings the little viscosity of wine and a slight bitterness. So you have these kind of backbone of botanicals going through the drink. I like mine in a rocks glass. You can build it right in the glass, like with a big ice cube or, you know, a handful of cubes. But I think when Terry was talking about syrupy, I think the biggest mistake is the vermouth can, you know, you have to, if you see a bar that not a high volume bar and their vermouth isn't refrigerated, you should refrigerate vermouth once it's open. It's a wine. So normally you might get oxidized vermouth on the vermouths. The colors can really change and vary, so that changes the bright red hue of it. But yeah, I kind of like, I just get a rock. At home, I would just build it in the glass. Campari, you know, would say it's not a Negroni without Campari, and I do love Campari. It has a very distinctive taste, but we're living in a fun time, too, now, where there's many more red bitter aperitivos being imported from Italy and made here domestically, so from California to Brooklyn and Seattle and beyond. So I like... There's one called Fourth Ave Spirits made here in Brooklyn that uses a natural red dye. They use purple carrots and hibiscus to dye it. So it's I use that one a lot. But I would say, too, Terry, I don't know if you ever had a spagliato, you know, the mistaken Negroni. That's probably my favorite, because that takes out the gin but adds Prosecco. So it suddenly becomes more of an aperitivo. It's not a spiritus. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those classic, you know, it's called a mistake because... You know, as bar stories go, this one is true. In Bar Basso in Milan in 1972, the owner, a customer ordered a Negroni, and the barman made it with Prosecco instead of gin. They kind of liked it. So now this bar is famous for it and serves them these big oversized glasses.
Okay, Amy has a statement before we wrap this up.
I have one question for you on your new book, Dives. When you come back to Seattle, what dive bar are you going to?
They're probably all closed. I mean, Hattie's Hat, Five Point Cafe. I'm not sure if the Ebb Tide Room is still open. Mm-hmm. I've never been there, but I want to go there. Yeah, so there's a lot to be explored and said about that. So
I guess it's not Palace Kitchen. We'll I was trying to sell Palace Kitchen.
Oh, you're not a dive. No.
All right, up next we got to take in a meatball fantasy. Terry and I are having meatball fantasies right now as we speak, and so we're going to talk about that. On the Cairo Radio 97.3 FM, it's the Hot Stove Society Show. See you in a minute. Welcome back. It's the Hot Stove Society Show. It's Chef Tom Douglas here at the Hot Stove Society Kitchen. And then my pal, the chef in the chapeau. Where are you coming from, chef?
From home. Thierry Rotiro, the chef in a hat. Right from home.
Right from home. Chef, we promised and we're going to deliver on some fantasies you and I have had lately. And I don't think people realize that chefs don't have normal fantasies. You know, it's not like I think about, you know, I don't think about Christie Brinkley or Lady Gaga or, you know, fantasies like that. I think about meatballs. That's what I fantasize about. How about you, chef?
I would think I think about rabbit a lot.
You think about rabbit. See, there you go. We have rabbit fantasies. It's just the nature of our business that we fantasize about different things.
I mean,
I fantasize about a great loaf of bread with a perfect crust, just a thick, dark crust that when I toast it, I'd almost have to hold my jaws together, like push them together because you have to get through that delicious crust. But the inside is... It's a meaty,
chewy,
chewy, but not dry unflavorful. It's got a great yeasty flavor. So anyway, meatball fantasy. Tell me about your fantasy. Perfect meatball?
I happen to be stuck at home. The freezer gets rated a lot more than usual, and it gets refilled a lot more than usual. So I did some ground beef meatball not too long ago. A week or two ago, and you know, I really thought about it carefully because we talk about meatball from time to time. I know you love them, Tom.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was trying to say, I'm like, well, how can I do this without really going too crazy with the filling in the meat itself? Because I like the ground beef I had was really good ground beef. So I was like, you know, I'm just going to keep it very simple. So I chopped some shallots. I mixed that in the bowl with my ground beef, a little salt and pepper, and I tried to keep it as clean as possible. And then I use butter to brown, beurre noisette to brown all my, I rolled my beef into some nice tight meatball. And then I was like, is this going to actually break in me? And it did not.
And break because you mean fall apart?
Yeah, fall apart. Yeah. So I was very shocked. I was a little bit shocked that because I hadn't done meatball in quite some time. And I was a little bit shocked that it actually stayed in its shape because I really packed them really hard. And the moisture of the onions in there and just brown butter and then spoon the brown butter over the meatball constantly when I'm cooking it with the pan slightly tilted.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you one thing, man, it's like it's not any different than cooking. If I was taking, for example, a hamburger patty and I was putting it in that pan, you basically end up with the same flavor. You end up with that beautiful, beurre noisette. Kind of roasted and toasted and basted kind of beef. In the end, it was absolutely delicious. I had made on the side a Marzano tomato sauce. So tomato in a can, whole. Then I had caramelized some onions, some fresh herbs, some garlic, lots of garlic, olive oil, and tomato, and then put the juice back of the tomato into it after I put a little white wine in there. So I had a base sauce really ready to go with it. And then when my meatball were nicely and seared on the outside, they had that nice caramelization on the outside from the beurre noisette cooking it. I threw the meatball into the sauce and cover it and cook my meatball that way so it gets all the way to the center.
Yeah, you finish cooking them that way. Yeah.
Yeah.
So after browning them.
Another little trick. I kept that beurre noisette on the side. And I have such a hard time throwing butter away because it's expensive and also because it's not burn. It's just beurre noisette. It's at a stage where it's just before burn.
Right, it's brown.
And at the end, I took the meatball off some meat, the tomato sauce, and took the beurre noisette and incorporated it into the tomato sauce and put the meatball back in it.
Mm-hmm.
it was lovely.
I bet it was. That's so funny.
And so you could put that. And again, you have that as a base. So next to that, you can choose to have, for example, first thing that comes to people's mind often is, let's make a pasta. You don't have to have a starch with that dinner. You can actually, you could do Swiss chard or red chard. You could do kale. You could do so many different vegetables that are available right now. You could do parsnip. You could do all kinds of different vegetables and put that on right next to it and have, you know, meatball and tomato with a plate of vegetable next to it.
But you're going
to
want, in that scenario, I would just do a big chunk of garlic bread or something like that. Yeah. You're going to want some little starch to go with it. Yeah.
You don't have to, Tom. Not if you don't. Not
Chef,
if you can't have it.
Are you literally telling me, the man who lives on bread, you're telling me that you would not serve bread with that?
No, I'm not telling you this. I'm telling you, you can have it without that.
Okay.
The point is not to say you cannot have it. The point is to say you can have it without that one time.
Yeah, but it would be so much better with it. Okay, my meatball fantasy is this, and some people would say to me, I think on this scenario, is like, why don't you just serve the shrimp and the scallops whole and blah, blah, blah. And, well, the funny part is that you can't really control them like you can a meatball. So I take a pound of shrimp, peeled, deveined, and just shrimp meat, basically, and I take a pound of scallops, same thing, and then I pull 1/4 pound out, and I put the rest in my food processor, and I make a paste out of those, like a sausage paste, right? And mm-hmm. then in my mortar and pestle on the side, I take and I grind up lemongrass and shallots and scallions, and I just mince everything up in that. And if you want, you could put, once you mince the lemongrass, you could put everything else, fresh ginger. And I make this fragrant paste that I'm going to season my meatballs with. And now, so I pull out that 3/4 of the paste that I made of my shrimp product, I pull that into the bowl, and I add in those ingredients that I just had in the ginger and the lemongrass and all those things. Now I take the other quarter of my mix, and I put it in the food processor, and then I hit pulse because I want some larger chunks, but I want the paste to hold the larger chunks together. Does that make sense what
you
I'm saying?
You can also Chuck? Use your knife.
Yeah, but I want them small enough that, and I've already dirtied my food processor. It's easy just to put them in pulse. I think the idea being is some is a paste and some is a little bit chunky. Then I mix all that together, and I season it with fish sauce and a little bit of, if you can do anything in this situation, you can put in, I'm going to save my chili crisp as a dipping sauce, but you could put in the fish sauce, a little hoisin, something. Stir it all together, and then go ahead, put a pair of gloves on, and make your meatballs. Just form them into maybe 3/4 of an inch to 1 inch size meatballs in the round. And then I'm going to pan fry them. Then they can go from there into, last week I made a duck broth from the Chinatown duck that I had bought, which was delicious. Then you can just serve those just like that. In a bowl of broth with lots of fresh bean sprouts and fresh herbs like Thai basil, fresh dill, cilantro, and just have this big, fragrant pile of vermicelli. You know, the rice vermicelli would be nice in there. The boon.
Sounds like something I would be having in Ho Chi Minh.
Yeah, well, you know, my head tends to go that direction when I cook. I just love that style of food. But
so
anyway,
no breading on yours, huh?
No breading at all. Nope. And if you wanted breading, you could then... You could coat the whole thing in panko and pan fry it like tonkatsu, you know, that breaded pork, and then use that sausage stuffing as your meat for the tonkatsu would be delicious.
Ooh.
Yeah. So those are all kinds of deliciousness that we have available in meatballs that I find lovely. Amy.
And we are bringing a meatball fantasy to life on our pop-up on Tuesday, March 9th, National Meatball Day. We should talk about your managing partner, Eric Tanaka's meatball fantasy, which is a staple around here when we celebrate things. He makes his famous spaghetti and meatball pizza.
I know. It's so gross.
It's so delicious.
Spaghetti on pizza?
Yeah, he puts spaghetti and meatballs on top of pizza.
Yeah, and we're going to do it at Serious Takeout on Tuesday.
Oh, my God.
It's amazing.
It's amazing.
And I can't wait for you to have it.
I've had it before. It's not for me, but everyone else loves it.
Yeah.
So you could come and try it and vote.
Yes, please. I think this will win. We're also doing, of course, a meatball sub and meatballs and polenta.
Wow. So we're going traditional, sort of. All right. You're listening to us on Cairo Radio. It's the Hot Stove Show. Up next, it's... the fear of cooking fish at home. I said this was going to be the next hour, but we're going to do it now on Facebook Live along with our radio show. Tom and Terry in the kitchen. Stay with us. Welcome back. We are here in the Hot Stove Kitchen. My name is Tom Douglas, and I am chef, owner of several joints here in Seattle, including the Serious Takeout out in Ballard, Serious Pie in downtown, and then we've combined three of our joints, C-Town, Etta's, and the Rub Shack into one, where we have indoor and outdoor seating in the north end of the Pike Place Market. And, of course, the Hot Stove.
And I'm Terry Rotirol, the chef in the hat.
Sorry, chef. I didn't mean to jump over you there. It's that chef Terry Rotirol, the chef in the chapeau, coming from his home office in Madison Valley. And we are cooking fish live. If you ever want to join us on Friday mornings when we tape the show, we are on Facebook Live on Fridays when we are kind of doing this. And we try to tackle once in a while issues that we get on our Facebook page as far as troubles people are having in the kitchen. And one of those troubles, Chef, is people are concerned about cooking fish at home. And I'm hesitant to tell them because I want them to come to my restaurants because we like cooking fish. But you know what I mean. People are scared of it for a couple of reasons. One is that it kind of smokes and smells up the kitchen or smells up the house, and they're worried about that. The other is that they often overcook it. It's just too darn dry. So where would you start with somebody who's a novice on cooking fish?
Well, I would start with, number one, get a good piece of fish, a fresh piece of fish. And a fresh piece of fish has many different connotations, I guess. And also, you have to trust somebody to tell you what a good piece of fish is. I would say definitely go to a fishmonger like Mutual Fish or, you know, in Rainier Valley or... or different places where you can trust your fishmonger, and they're going to show you a good piece of, let's use salmon, which is our local pride here, and, you know, make sure you have a good piece of salmon. From then on, if you're afraid of, okay, the fear, I think, and I've seen many people do this, you don't start hot enough to sear. That's one of the biggest concerns that a lot of people have. They don't really understand searing. And then the other, so make sure your pan is hot enough. Now, in order to get a pan hot enough to sear, if you have a light-looking pan, nonstick, then you make your eggs with for breakfast in the morning, that's not probably the right pan to do that with. You need to find a pan that's going to hold the heat, because it takes a little while to cook a piece of fish in a cast iron pan or in a very thick bottom pan. It takes a little while. So you want something that keeps the heat when you remove it from the frame and put it in the oven, for example, or when you keep it on the stove. So those are two important things. And then three, well, it's going to smell your house. You know, like Tom say, kill a life.
Take one for the team.
Yeah, and if you're afraid of smell of the food, then you have a different issue on your hand. Mm-hmm. You know, open the windows, the doors, put a fan.
So as far as I would say now, getting prepped. So we've talked about we want a thicker bottom pan, especially if you're going to stay on the stovetop, because we want to create our own kind of oven scenario there. I'm giving it a sear, like you said, not too hot, medium hot, because my fillets are about 3/4 to an inch thick. So if you go too hot, you're going to burn the outside and have a raw inside. I put my rub on, and now I'm going to flip my fish right here in the pan. And you can see, those that are watching live, that I've got a nice golden brown crust. And I'm going to now go over and look for my meat thermometer. So this is a trick that I use all the time, especially for novice fish cookers, which is, I don't know why people think that they're going to cook fish for the first time in their life, and then they're going to put a finger on it and think they can tell if it's done or not. You know, we have cooks that do this hundreds of times a night. They can't tell. And yet people have read something online, or you just touch it and it's supposed to feel like the palm of your hand or around your thumb. And it's just such crazy nonsense. Get a meat thermometer. A little digital one is the best. And then keep track of your manage your fire, right? Keep track of what's going on in your pan just by taking the temperature of the fish. And this will make you a much better cook. I don't care if you're cooking a 1-inch thick rib steak, or if you're cooking a 1/2-inch thick piece of sockeye salmon from Bristol Bay. You want to be able to manage your pan and your cooking, and that's what a digital thermometer will do for you. So I'm just going to stick mine into my fillet. My guess is it's about half cooked at this point, just from a timing perspective. And I'm at, in the center of my fillet, I'm at about 100 degrees right now. So for me, in my fillet cooking, I want to get to about 120 is when I pull it, because I don't personally like rare fish. I either want it raw or I want it medium rare. I don't like the seared on the outside, raw in the center, except maybe on a piece of tuna. But I generally like fish cooked medium rare to medium, personally. That's my taste. You have a preference in temperature?
I'm the same way. I think 120 is a good number. And it goes, if you're cooking cod, I would go 125. If you're cooking a very oily fish, I would go further, 130 maybe, because it can hold the heat and it can actually be cooked a little bit more. Better than that, yes, salmon, I would definitely go 120, especially nice, beautiful wild salmon like that.
Yeah. So those are a couple important things. Okay, here's the next thing I'm going to do. I'm at about 105 right now, and I just reached down. I've got this nice cast iron pan. I just reached down and turned off my burner. So remember, I just said I don't like it raw in the middle, but I'm only at 105. So essentially, it's a little bit warmer than you and I are, Chef. But the residual heat from the pan, this is the way you do this on the stovetop if you have time. So you turn the heat off and let that gentle heat from the pan continue to warm your fish through. If you cook your fish super hot on both sides, by the time you let it rest, it's going to be cold in the center, right? If you cook it super hot on both sides and you pull it at 125 degrees, by the time you let it rest, it's going to be 140 degrees, because that residual heat keeps cooking. So I'm using this gentle technique of cooking it so that it can gently warm through the center to the temperature now with my fire off. And you don't need a cast iron for this. You can do this on a thick bottom stainless. You could do it in an Emile Henry, like an enameled cast iron. There's so many ways you could do this. But I'm going to put my microphone down to my pan here.
Yeah, it's still cooking.
It's still cooking, right? And people forget that sometimes when they're in a hurry to get dinner. They think, well, I've cooked my fish. No, it's still cooking. So and that's the heat's been off for over a minute, and it's still searing like that because of my pan. So I'm going to take one temperature. Here we are now. I'm at 100. Look at that. I'm at 118. So I'm going to pull my fish at this point. Look at how beautiful my salmon is now that I folded under the edge under so that all the thickness of the fish was the same throughout. And now we still have to let it rest, right, Chef? I would let this rest maybe
absolutely
3 to 5 minutes. You don't want to serve it cold. It's not going to hold the heat like a roast does. But you like just like a steak, you want to let it rest. They use the usual term is 10 minutes per inch. But that's about right as far as a one-inch thick New York steak or rib steak. These are a little less than an inch. I'm going to let these rest 3 to 5 minutes.
Now, one thing you can do, this is a great idea for an entree or whatever, but you can also, as we come into spring, you could make a beautiful fresh pea salad underneath that with some fava beans and some peas.
And morels.
And then crumble, and then you could just shave that salmon piece into a flake of salmon and throw that on top of your salad and eat that with your peas underneath and everything, or shave fennel. Oh, my God.
So when I open this up, I'm looking directly into the center of this filet, and I've got that translucency still in the center. It's not opaque, which means that I still have a little bit of rareness to go, and it's right at that medium level that I want it to be. And this is the thinner piece, so the thicker piece should be just a little bit more rare even. And that's kind of what you're looking for. I love this little translucency in the center that's left there. You see on the outside, you can see the color of well done. In the center, you can see it's still a little bit pink and translucent, just like a steak would be, you know, where it gets redder to the center. The fish is the same exact thing. So,
and also, make no mistake, if you are undercooked, you can always throw it in the oven for a couple of minutes or back in your pan for a couple of minutes covered, and it will act like an oven, and it will cook it a little bit more. But if you overcook it, you cannot bring it back.
then you're making salmon cakes out of it. All right, coming up in our second hour, we've got questions from Amy, our producer, about some personal questions. Oh, my God. I'm scared. Mary Derby, the founder and winemaker of Dama Wines, is here. And, of course, the Rub with Love Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge is going to wrap up the end of the show. Stay with us. It's a good time had by all. On Cairo Radio, it's the Hot Stove Society, 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's the Hot Stove Society Show, hour number two. Thank you for listening. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Thierry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
And we are happy to have...
Owner of Luke in Medicine Valley and proud shifted to go.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know why I'm proud of it, but...
You know, we've been on back in-house again with the 25% rule for the last few weeks, and it's interesting how many people still prefer to sit outside. There's a lot of people that still aren't comfortable, so... our indoors and outdoors are both busy, rain or shine. In the next hour, or in this hour, we're going to jump into questions for Tom and Terry. Amy's got a little thought about that. Taste Washington is finding new ways to enjoy food and wine that make Washington State so incredibly delightful. Chef Aaron Verzoza from Archipelago is here to talk about the James Beard Foundation's Taste America. And lastly, it's the Rub with Love Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge. Where I don't know who our third is going to be.
Aaron, Chef Aaron.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Good. We're going to jump right into that. And does he know how to play, or are we going to crush him?
Ooh. Well, I did not text him any answers or anything, so.
Like you usually do. All right. Yeah. Let's jump right into questions.
All right. So for those of you who did not listen to last week, we started with 43 questions for Thierry, and we learned a lot about him. And the reason why we were doing this is we have a lot of people that, when I run into people, they ask me what Tom and Thierry are really like. So we're going to find out. All right, Tom.
They drink Prosecco and eat salmon for breakfast.
Hey, that's my friend.
Yeah.
All right, Tom, are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
Okay. if you were not a chef or restaurateur, what would you be?
Well, I think I'd go into the professional baby naming business create theme songs for every child that pops out.
All right. Yeah. You're going to be really good at that.
I already am.
Yeah.
Hercules.
What is your favorite smell?
I love the smell of star anise because it permeates Chinese barbecue.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite things to do is cook out of the Chinatown barbecue window. You know what I mean by that?
I do know what you mean.
Yeah. Just take those foods and kind of use them to sit, use them sparingly in other things to make them flavored up.
Sure. Well, maybe that's our next Facebook Live demo.
Yeah. There you
go. Okay. Favorite musical?
Well, as you know.
I know.
You have to kind of put in eras, like in the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s,
let's
the
go 2000s. 60s.
60s? Hello, Dolly. Yeah. Carol Channing. Yeah. Come on.
All right. What about 70s then?
70s, I would say Hair.
Oh.
But Hair might have been the 60s too, but maybe. Maybe. But yeah. I loved, or I was in Godspell in high school.
Oh, yeah, I didn't know that.
I was happening. I was always in the chorus, sadly. I never had the voice for a star role like Chef Thierry.
Yeah.
All right.
What's a song you can listen to on repeat?
Stories by Brandi Carlile or Rosalita by Bruce Springsteen.
Oh, a dessert you do not
or like. Or Tchaikovsky's 1812 Orchestra. I cannot get enough of that. I will sit in my car and listen to that on repeat. Have you ever listened to that? It's most famous for being used at like at the culmination, the climax of the fireworks. And the cannons go off and, you know, it's just, it's spectacular.
Wow, we'll have to listen to this.
Yeah, it is. Oh, you got to listen. And you got to be in your car. You got to be surrounded by the music.
Okay.
Because when the cannons go off, your goosebumps go off. I'm telling you.
Pro tip.
And you know what's funny about that?
How many questions do we have?
Well, we have about 40 more to go.
What's funny about that is that, you know, I'm the only one in my household that likes loud music. Like, I like to turn it up.
Yeah,
me too. My daughter, you know, even when she was 12 years old, said, "Dad, turn down the music." It's like, who does that?
Yeah. Not Hercules.
Not Hercules.
Yeah. Okay. A dessert you do not like.
A dessert. Oh, Terry loves this. And that's it's one of the things I was trying to decide if I still wanted to be friends with him early on in our relationship. He loves cooked fruit, like fruit compotes.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
I can't stand it. And you love it, don't you?
Yeah, of course. If it's done well, yes, absolutely.
And well, the what's done well? I mean, it's just boiled fruit. Yeah. I mean, I can see if it was dried fruit that has still some spine to it, but boiled fresh fruit, gross.
All right. What's your spirit animal?
Spirit animal? Well, I was called Bear in high school because I was always the biggest and had a lot of hair. But I would say my spirit animal is a brontosaurus because I'm a lover at heart. You know, the brontosauruses are vegetarians, but I'm big.
What?
I can reach the leaves.
Yeah.
And I eat a lot of them.
You do. You like your veggies. Who was your childhood crush?
Boy, every girl I ever met. Sadly, I've always been a bit of a hound when it comes to crushes. I've always liked older women.
Mm-hmm.
So early on, I'd say Barbara Streisand.
Yeah.
Suzanne Summers.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Best piece of advice you've ever received?
You know, I didn't take much from my 12-year Catholic education other than, you know, one of the commandments is do unto others as you would have done to, how does it go?
Do
yourself or something like that. Yeah. I never treat anybody differently than I would want to be treated, and I never ask anyone to do anything that I wouldn't do myself.
That is very true with working with you.
Which is what?
That you do live by that. My first shift ever, you were in the dish pit the entire event. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go. That's because you broke all the glass.
I did, yes. Okay, we're going to have to speed through these. Superpower you would want?
I've been researching Hercules lately, and I really like the whole the fact that his eyes are friendly, but his thighs are like iron.
Wow.
Yeah, that's right there in the song. It says it's got to be true, and that that he shoots an arrow to the sun, and explodes the sun in a way that is bright and cheery. I mean, who else could do that? Usually people try to put the sun out and kill everyone.
Yeah.
Hercules just makes it brighter.
Oh, okay. We're going to have to do some rapid fire on these. Secret talent.
There's no rapid fire on that.
There's no rapid fire with Tom Pierce.
Yeah. Secret talent. You know, as a youngster, I was really good. I would tie a chicken neck with a piece of string and drop it in, and I could bring three or four or five blue crabs up on one string because I was very gentle with my tugging.
Oh, I was really wondering where that was going, but...
I know.
Okay. Favorite musical of all time.
Where did you think it was?
Or favorite movie of all time.
Favorite movie of all time? Oh, my God. Funny Girl. You kidding me?
Yeah.
What's... Yeah. It's, you know, I don't know if you know that, but... I'm the greatest star. I am by far, but nobody knows it.
Wow, that was beautiful.
Last night, Sean and I, during our class last night, decided that I was definitely a diva.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What's something you cannot live without?
You.
Oh, three words to describe yourself.
Oh, I would say old, round, and dated.
Okay, what's your favorite fast food? I think I know this one.
My favorite fast food now or in history?
How about now?
Now, I've been getting on with the tater tots down at Seatown. Who knew, Chef Terry, that I would become the tater tot king of Seattle? Down at Seatown Restaurant. So with my wow. fish and chip combo.
I would have never guessed that either.
Well, the thing is, when we were putting fries out in the beginning, and when it was cold out, and then the fries would get cold really fast out on the deck.
Yeah.
Tater tots are like little molten lava bombs.
They hold well.
After Hercules shoots the sun, it turns into molten tater tots.
Yeah. Okay, we got through 14 of my 43 questions.
Well, that was too many questions.
Well, you know, I've tried this on several people, and they were a lot faster. So,
well, do you want to get to know us, or do you want to be superficial?
True. Okay.
Hey, Tom. Yeah. Tom, I don't want to show off, but I did it last week.
You did.
I understand, but I'm just saying, do you want to be superficial, or do you want me to show up? Okay, up next, Mary Derby, the founder of and winemaker of DAMA, D-A-M-A Wines, is here to talk about Washington Wine Month, the month of March. On Cairo Radio, it's the Hot Stove Society Show, 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Hot Stove Society Show on Cairo. I'm Chef Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
And Terry, it's time for Washington Wine Month again. I know you and I have participated for many years in this event, and it's a little bit different since we have very few people jumping into our restaurants right now, but that doesn't mean it can't go on with a flair, so to speak.
Right. It should go on.
Should go on. We often talk about farmers and then the agricultural products in our state. And oftentimes I think the winemakers, probably right along up with the fishermen, get forgotten as, you know, being the farmers of our resources here in the state and growing grapes in our vineyards. So let's jump right in. We have Avril Dunn Mooney here. She is with the Washington Wine Commission. And Avril, tell us about Taste Washington, what's happening now, and how people can get involved.
Yes, you guys are correct. Taste Washington as an event does live on, and boy, are we excited. The Taste Washington event has evolved, as of everybody, since this past year that we've had. Instead of gathering all of Washington's bounty from across the state and showcasing it right here in downtown Seattle, we are now bringing it back local. Wineries and restaurants can participate from wherever they are all across the state and engage with their local communities. You guys know this to be true from a restaurant side just as well as we do from the winery side, if not more. But if this past year has taught us anything, it's that it's support and local engagement that has become everything to our small businesses. So now more than ever, we need to support restaurants and wineries and hotels. So this year's Taste Washington, we're giving awareness to our partners across the entire state. And we're using the Taste Washington platform to connect consumers directly to our entire industry.
So that means that you can plan your Cabernet to your casserole or your Chardonnay to your catch of the day. There's all sorts of fun ways to kind of get involved in this.
That's right. So again, it's wineries and restaurants can participate from wherever they are across the entire state, and you can participate on a weekly level, a monthly level, or both. So on a weekly level, we've got those great programs that Tom, you just mentioned that we've introduced this year called Taste Washington To Go. And Taste Washington at Home. Those are both new programs that are weekly activations with rotating and varying themes each week. And then Taste Washington is at home is where you get to go out, bring all of the ingredients back to your home, and you get to be the chef in the comfort of your own home. And you don't even have to wear pants. So it's very in line with what people are doing.
Exactly. You can wear a mermaid outfit if you wanted to.
Exactly. You do you, as they say.
Exactly. I know we're jumping in on March 10th. We've got a dinner box from Seatown, which is a Chardonnay with a creamy Alaska crab and cod chowder. Red pepper Ruiz, savory chive scones. So we're doing all sorts of fun stuff, including a 2015 Cote de Bonneville Chardonnay from the Yakima Valley. Mary Derby is here, founder and winemaker of Dama Wines. And Mary, my show sheet says you are a riddle, a passionate romantic, you're an artist, an idealist, and a dreamer. I don't find that as a riddle. You sound like somebody I want to know.
Well, of course you do. Yeah, you know, I've kind of come into this side of the business through the art world. I was a classically trained singer for a number of years, and then moved to Washington State and helped start up Spring Valley Vineyard Winery back in 2000, and then started Dama in 2007. I do continue doing a little bit of singing here and there, but you know, I get pulled in a lot of directions, so that unfortunately doesn't always, I don't always have the time for it, concentrating and really focusing on that. But I'm proud to say that Dama has been around for a number of years, and we're very, you know, proud to be a part of our community here in Walla Walla.
And it's one of the women-owned wineries, too.
Yes, that was one of the things that COVID helped us move on was getting sanctioned by the government to become, you know, saying that we are fully woman owned. And it's a nice little tagline. It was a lot of paperwork. we had to prove that we were women and that we were women owned. You know, there were no other monies from anybody else, no aliens or anything. So it was an interesting road to go down, but it feels good now to be able to say it and be a part of that community.
So if people want to support wineries, small wineries, where, you know, maybe you're not in your local restaurant that's supporting them, maybe some of the larger grocery stores don't have the depth of in their wine cases that can show off some of the local small wineries, how would you suggest people support their local winery?
I think so many of us, as far as the smaller wineries, are doing so much more on Instagram or Facebook, so much more social media, and you know, to start following them that way or get on their mailing list. You don't necessarily have to become a club member, but just to, you know, get their newsletter to find out, oh, maybe there's a special this month, or who are they? What are they doing? What are they highlighting? You know, Instagram has definitely been a great tool on, you know, especially Instagram Live and even Facebook Live, as far as putting your face out there and doing fun chats. I think everybody in the industry, whether it's, you know, wineries or restaurant or whatever, have really had to put themselves in that arena of social media on such a different level than we had been before once COVID started.
Right.
And it's been kind of fun. You know what I mean? It's,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, I kind of have a good time with it. It's like, I'm not a, you know, actress by any means, but it's just, let's have fun, you know? And hopefully people will then relate to that and come to Walla Walla when they can or, you know, buy online. And we just, I think all of us have seen more sales online.
Yeah, exactly.
The growth of that has been wonderful.
Chef Terry, what are you cooking for Washington Wine Month? You have a special dish that you're making?
I have not been able to do anything yet, but I do want to do something, and I'm not quite sure how we're going to wrap this up between now and the end of March. I would like to move into April. Can we do the wine months, March and April?
All year long. I bet Avril would say,
why not?
Avril, are you okay with that if he does it all year long?
I'm 100% on board with that. Absolutely.
There we go.
Avril, what are some of the other meals that you've heard about out there? I told you about ours, which is the chowder, and also all March. We've got a very expensive option for you because a number one thing people are asking for us at Seatown is crab, and I bought this beautiful Maris leg king crab, but it's super expensive, so we don't think we're going to sell
totally
a whole lot, but it's so good, so good.
Right. Well, I think that's what's so great about this to-go package that we've created is that not only are you able to highlight restaurants, specialty dishes, and these fun personality techniques that show up in your cooking, but you're pairing it with a different variety of Washington State wine. So even just that combo alone between a Chardonnay and a crab leg is incredible. So the 5 weeks is a different variety and a different theme. So currently we're in Cabernet and Casserole. Tom, as you just shared, next week we're doing Chardonnay and the catch of the day. So you're seeing everything from mussels and scallops to cedar plank salmon, all with a bottle of Chardonnay. We've got Syrah and barbecue coming up, which, yes, please. We've got red blends and family recipes. And then lastly, Rieslings with noodles and dumplings. So a really, a true showcasing of what Washington's bounty has to offer that you normally would have been able to see under the big tent that was Taste Washington's Grand Tasting. But this year we're doing it all.
Hey, we're
a
making do.
Differently.
That's what we do.
It's fun. So I being from Minnesota, have an issue with casserole. We do not call it casserole.
It's a hot dish.
It is a hot dish, yes.
But isn't that, and Tom, you and Terry can probably speak better to this than I can, but casserole is kind of all-encompassing. I mean, you can do anything from enchiladas to mac and cheese.
Avril, you're not going to win this one. It's a hot dish in Minnesota.
Exactly. Long okay. Gone on your grandma's casserole.
All right, we've been talking with Avril Dunn-Mooney from the Washington Wine Commission and Mary Derby from Adama Wines. And thank you both for getting the Washington Wine Month kicked off in such a fancy way. We'll continue to follow this for the rest of the month and talk about some of the dishes available throughout our city right here on the Hot Stove Society show.
Yes, Washington.org has all the information. Because the biggest change is that there are no in-person events and no tickets this year, but everything is explained on TasteWashington.org.
All right, good. Up next, we've got Sheriff Aaron Verzosa here from Taste America, a James Beard Foundation event. When we come back, it's the Hot Stove Society Show on Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's the Hot Stove Society Show on Cairo Radio. This is Tom Douglas.
And Terry Rocheroe, the chef in the hat.
And Terry, you and I are both proud owners of James Beard Awards, and we are thrilled to find out that the James Beard Foundation's Taste America is coming back, bringing chefs and diners from across the country together for a virtual community dinner to eat and celebrate restaurants. And as we all know, because we've been in the news, restaurants could use your support at this time. We have Dick Stevens here from Varsity Communications. He's going to tell us about the events that are happening around the city. And then we also have Chef Aaron Verzosa of Archipelago Restaurant to tell us what he's going to be doing. So, Dick, welcome to the show.
Tom, it's always a pleasure. Thank you for always supporting us. And you and Terry are obviously in the Hall of Fame. You are past Taste America All-Star chefs for us in the past.
There you go.
We're excited about what we're doing with Taste America. This is the second time now that we have done what's called an at-home Taste America. Last year, when the pandemic hit, obviously two industries that were keenly disrupted were the restaurant industry and the event industry. And as it relates to the foundation, there were hundreds of events that were canceled, including Taste America. So last year, we put together a pilot program and did a 20-city Taste America dinner all on the same night back in October. We were elated to have Chef Wilson with Fire and Vine do our first one in Seattle. It was a big hit. We sold out all 100 meal kits. And based on the success of that, this year, the foundation has chose 10 cities to do the virtual dining event. And for the ninth year in a row, thanks to everybody in this community, Seattle continues to be selected as one of these top 10 cities. So on March 21, just a couple weeks away, at Chef Aaron's restaurant, we are going to be doing another virtual dinner where there'll be a meal pickup. And just a really seamless opportunity for people to have an incredible world-class dinner ready to go at completely packaged cocktails. And they'll log in and watch these chefs nationally and locally take you right through the meal kit. It's really a great program and an opportunity to make the foundation wheels keep turning through this reboot.
And what does Rabbit Hole Spirits have to do with this show?
Rabbit Hole has been amazing. They have stood through this
this tsunami through all of it with the foundation of Not Wavered. They are our whiskey sponsor, and they put together a really great cocktail that'll be pre-mixed by a mixologist. And when you come pick up your meal kits on the 21st, everything will be bottled and ready to pour into your favorite glass at home. So they're giving us a beautiful cocktail that we'll be working on. And everything's paired with Chef's awesome menu, which he'll walk us through here when you guys are ready.
All right. All right. Let's bring in Chef Aaron Versosa of Archipelago Restaurant. And Aaron, I just have to tell you, you were involved in a big way in my daughter's engagement with her now husband, Ben Byers.
That's right. First of all, thanks, Tom Terry, for having us on the show. And we're really excited about the menu and referencing your daughter's engagement and all that. We actually had the opportunity to have you on or have you at the restaurant just a little bit before the pandemic hit. And so, you know, Tom, you will recall this, but, you know, a lot of our tasting menu has to do with storytelling, specifically, you know, the Filipino American history here in the region of Northwest. And so we're really excited about trying to bring that to the home experience with a really nice meal kit, really easy preparation. We're focusing on 3 courses, have a nice appetizer focusing on the Alasqueros, which is a story of one of the first waves of immigration of Filipinos here in Seattle in the Northwest. That's going to feature a wild Alaskan scallop, sort of raw kinilaw preparation. And then we're going to have 2 entree options, really excited about that, focusing on the story of Maria Rosa, who was a pioneer in food chemistry in the early 1900s, came from the Philippines and went to the UW, graduated in 1917. And her sauce, we're focusing this pork belly lechon around with a Northwest Dinuguan black truffle rice. And then we do have a plant-based vegetarian option focusing on a porcini ferment with the Norosa sauce and some hen of the woods or maitake mushrooms and another wild rice preparation there with black truffle. So really excited about that entree. And then the last course we're doing is focusing on what's in every pantry or pastry pantry for Filipinos, which is condensed milk. We make our own condensed milk, and we are focusing on the story of Carnation Dairy Farm just here in Washington, and doing a set cream, ginger set cream, local ginger from our farmer, Ari at Kamayan Farms, and little crumble with preserved huckleberry. So really nice, easy pickup, and it'll be really tasty for sure at home to pair with the cocktails.
And so people buy your box, and it supports the James Beard Foundation. It supports you. It supports them having a delicious dinner. And then you will then do a online demo with the ingredients to show what it is that people picked up in their dinner box, right? But their dinner is ready. You're just going to show how you did it.
That's right. We just shot that a couple of days ago, and it's really, the most difficult is the entree, and it's really a lot of reheat things that are prepared, ready to go with instructions in the video as well.
Okay, fun. Super fun.
Smart.
And, you know, my daughter and her, I wanted to go back to that for 1 second just because it's an important day. They got engaged. I believe you brought the ring out from the kitchen. Is that right, with dessert?
We were surprised as well. It was our first time that ever happened, and I think I might have told them, like, this better work out or your dad's gonna be real mad at me. So it was a fun one for us, our first engagement at the restaurant, and yeah, it'll be a memory we have for a long time.
Well, you know, I was a little ticked off because I have 15 restaurants she could have done the same thing in. Do you think she would have chosen one of her poor dad's restaurants?
Well, you know, we just had our first son last year, and we might have to exchange if he decides to get married. We'll have him do it at your restaurant.
Well, that's what I was going to tell you, is that this morning at 4:30, the wedding has worked out so far because baby Hercules came along at 4:30 this morning.
Oh my gosh!
And so, it's been an exciting day in the Byers Douglas household. Dick and Aaron, anything else we want to get across to people to get them informed? You know, when I do a dinner box, I tend to do a dance party with like a little musical theme or something like that. What are you bringing to the table?
I'll dance if they need, for sure.
You'll dance, all right. I know Eduardo Jordan did a dance party with Quest Love at the end of Soul of Seattle. So you got a lot to live up to here.
That's true.
I think what's really cool about the program is the folks that produce the actual James Beard Awards when we're in the physical world. And every year, you know, the whole world focuses on Chicago or New York City. I've had the great pleasure of enjoying this three or four times with Chef Terry. The same people that put on basically the whole James Beard Food Week are putting on these virtual productions. So the video quality, the music, the editing is at the top of the level. So when people buy the ticket, if you go to jbftasteamerica.org, click on Seattle. It's a really easy process. Once you make the ticket purchase, we'll then follow up with a link so people know exactly what time to log on that night and take advantage. And it's cut to a time also that's real digestible. We're not asking people to check in and do this for 2 hours. It's a beautiful package. Chef Aaron's gone on there and been a big part of this thing, and I'm stoked about him being our all-star this year. Every year we have an all-star that represents, you know, a snapshot of the fabric of what's going on in this market, and he's bringing along a lot of cutting edge, a diverse consideration for the Pacific Northwest, and just really putting Seattle's face forward. So if you go to jbftasteamerica.org, you can buy the tickets today. We've got about 25 tickets left. It's going really, really well. It's $95, or you can buy a pair for $175. I'll be there to pass out the meal kits, and Chef Aaron will be ready to go with his team. It'll be a lot of fun and safe.
And safe. Curbside service.
Beautiful. And Filipino is hot right now. Go Filipino.
Oh, thanks.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
There are so many young, impressive Filipino chefs working either in their own kitchens or in kitchens of others around this whole city and area. And there's just such a rich history of the Filipino community here in our town that if you haven't gone out to explore it, it's worth it. It's worth it. I'm still, one of my young chefs left us to go open his own place up in Edmonds called Barcata. Amy, have you been there?
I have. Of course I have.
And what do you like there?
Okay, so it's normally something that I wouldn't have, but the sig sig, is that, am I saying it correctly? That is such a delicious meal there. Uh-huh. And they have a great tent and fire pits out, and Brian and Todd Ham make great cocktails there.
So it's super fun, and you live in that neighborhood, and it's nice to have that in your backyard.
Yes. Yeah. All right, Chef Aaron is going to hang out with us, and you guys are going to battle tasty trivia.
Oh, really? Oh, really?
Yeah, I wish it could be a dance-off.
I do, too.
Ooh, I am scared now.
Yeah, you know, Aaron, when
Chef
he
Terry
had...
and I are going to dance on his grave.
Yeah, oh, well, Aaron had a dance party at the Palace Ballroom for a night market, and I saw it, and I don't... He was really good.
He was really good?
Really good, so...
Well, maybe I have to take my challenging words back.
I think so.
All right, up next, it's the Rub with Love... food for thought, tasty trivia challenge. Chef Aaron is going to join us, and we're going to have a blast on Cairo Radio. Oh, it's the Hot Stove Society Show, 97.3 FM. All right, we're back in the kitchen. It's the Hot Stove Society Show. We're joined again by Aaron Verzoza of Archipelago Restaurant down in the Rainier Valley area. And he is going to be fresh fodder for our Rub with Love Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge. And today, a special thing for our listeners today, if you could do me the favor and help my Rub with Love brand, starting March 8th, there's the Battle of the Brands competition featuring 16 local Washington brands, a March Madness-style bracket event. You will have 1 week to build your bracket, slotting brands into each round and making a guess at who will win. There will be a couple of weeks of voting, and prizes for the lucky winners will be chosen at random from a pool of perfect score prediction brackets. So where do you do this?
Okay, so you go to bartaildrugs.com. I filled out my winning bracket last night. Mm-hmm. Just takes a few moments. You have a week to fill out your bracket, and then the next couple of weeks they're going to start competing.
I want to take down like a big brand of Starbucks in there or anything like that. No. I want the radio listeners and us, and you can vote as many times as you want.
Yes.
Yeah. So, Amy, you only did one last night?
I only did one last night, but I'll after the show, I'll just kind of do that all day.
You know, you do have 12 hours off from work. What do you do with all that time?
Oh, I was watching Cobra Kai.
Cobra Kai. Gross. All right, let's start off with our Food for Thought Taste Trivia. What are the rules?
I'm going to ask each of you 5 questions. And the loser is paying for the very heavy shipment of Rub with Love. This Rub with Love package is marvelous for meatballs this week.
Nice.
You can make your meatballs robust with veggie rub. Smoked paprika will bring smoky goodness to your meatballs. We added in the exotic mushroom rub for a rich and earthy flavor, and for your chicken and turkey meatballs, my favorite, we added chicken rub.
Now, that's a big day when we give away a mushroom rub. It's $2 more per jar
than
all my other rubs. I'm just saying.
Favorite. Wow.
All right, so the loser is going to pay for shipping.
And that can often run $7 to $10, so that's a commitment.
Yes. Yes, and you are shipping to Redmond today to a listener named Richard.
Okay, let's start.
Okay, Terry, we're going to start with you, and then I'm going to ask Aaron questions, and then Tommy D will finish.
All right,
Terry.
I'm ready.
Are you ready? Aaron, just so you know, we talked about meatballs and cocktails and wine in this episode, so I hope you know your meatball trivia.
Okay,
Terry, what year did IKEA Swedish meatballs make their debut?
Oh my God! I'm going to say 1996.
No,
you're only 100 years off.
1980.
Oh wow, that far back? No.
What is the Italian word for meatball?
Does it start with an A?
Mm-mm.
No. Mm. I'm probably sure I know this, but can't remember right this moment.
Okay, it starts with a P.
With a P. No, I don't know. Go ahead.
It's a polpette.
Yes.
Okay.
Polpette.
Terry, in what year did Washington State have its record harvest in volume? A, 2011. B, 2013. C, 2015. Or D, 2016.
Does that include airplanes, or does it have to be grown in the ground?
I'm going to stick to agriculture.
You're going to stick to agriculture. Okay.
So I'm going to go 2013.
Oh, no. It is D, 2016.
Of course it is. Okay. Everyone knows that, Terry.
Okay.
Oh, yeah?
Terry, is there vodka in a White Russian?
Yes.
Woo! Good job. Okay. Orange juice, Galliano, vodka on the rocks, served in a Collins glass, makes this cocktail.
I know it. I got this.
Go ahead, Tom.
Harvey Wallbanger.
Tom, you are correct.
Yes.
Terry.
Good for you.
You got one out of five.
Aaron, you're going to win.
Remember, Chef Terry said he was going to dance on your grave, Aaron.
Oh, yeah. Terry.
Or was that me?
That was you.
Oh, that was me. Never mind.
All right, Aaron, I'm going to give you multiple choice for this one. Can you tell me how many IKEA meatballs are sold per year? A, 550 million, B, 680 million, C, 990 million, or D, 1 billion?
D, 1 billion.
You are correct.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
That's amazing amount of meatballs.
Yes.
Oh, my.
Do they have little Swedish ladies back in the kitchen just rolling those up by hand?
Yeah. Okay,
my hands are getting sore just thinking about it.
Can you tell me what lion's head meatballs are traditionally served with, as said to resemble a lion's head or mane?
Macaroni.
Bok choy or cabbage?
You were close.
Okay, how many wineries are in Washington State?
An exact number, or is it like...
You can be within 100.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll say 500.
No, 900 wineries.
I was going to say 973 wineries. Yeah.
Okay, creme de menthe, creme de cacao, and light cream are in this cocktail.
I don't know. What is this cocktail?
It is a grasshopper.
Grasshopper.
Nope.
Okay, what fruit is grenadine made with?
Is it pomegranate?
You are correct.
No.
Yes.
I am right.
Yes, a lot of people think it's just cherry. Yeah,
I didn't know that either.
Grenade in France is the word for pomegranate.
Pomegranate. Oh.
Okay, all right, so how many did he get right there?
Aaron, you had 2 out of 5.
Ooh, we have a new leader in the clubhouse.
Yes,
new leader in the clubhouse.
Okay, Tom.
Okay.
At IKEA, the Swedish meatballs sell for $5.99 a plate. Do you know what they are served with?
Lingonberry sauce.
Okay, can you tell me what country has a meatball that is made with shredded potato instead of a breadcrumbs?
A meatball? Mm-hmm. Shredded potato instead of breadcrumbs? What does that mean?
What country?
I say as a thickener.
Yes.
Oh, I would say Poland.
No, Romania.
Romania. It's very Eastern European,
close!
The whole idea, yeah.
It's very close.
So close.
Okay, this I'm going to give you multiple choice. What year were the first wine grapes planted in Washington State? 1925, 1825, 1842, or 1942?
1925.
No.
Walter Klor.
It's 1825.
1825? Well, yes. Commercially viable. I mean, I'm sure people planted grapes forever, but commercial grapes were in 1825?
Correct.
You sure?
I'm positive.
Walter Klor was not alive. He's considered the father of Washington wine.
Okay, we'll do a fact check, and we're going to put it on Facebook Live. What do you get when you mix scotch and Drambuie?
A rusty nail.
Correct. All right.
Ooh, I am hot on the cocktails today.
Tom, okay, you're hot on the cocktail. You should be a bartender.
Yeah.
What fruit is used to flavor?
Wait, I get a little credit for lingonberry. You asked. You didn't say the whole
fine.
Set.
Okay, fine. 0.5.
Oh, my God. You are so
I gave him one. I gave him one for that.
Yeah. Thanks, Chef Terry. Right.
One. Oh. Okay, so now you're tied, sort of, with Chef Aaron. What fruit is used to flavor Southern Comfort?
Oh, my God. Southern Comfort. That is just like the worst syrup ever. Well, I'm going to say peaches.
You are correct.
Yeah. Oh, look at that.
Peaches.
How about
that?
That
is definitely making you a winner there.
Yeah, that's a... Ding, 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 ding. We have a winner.
Let's see. Okay, here, who won? You are paying for shipping, and Tom,
that's right.
You won. Sort of.
Sort of. What do you mean?
And
even
since,
at
and
one,
since I'm broke.
I am just very upset right now. I was up all night having a baby.
I know. You must be tired.
Oh, no, you were not. Your daughter was, and your wife might be, but not you. You said you slept beautifully.
Shh, be quiet. Aaron Versosa, thank you so much. We appreciate your time, and good luck on your James Beard box. It sounds delicious. If you want to be part of the show, you can join the community on Facebook at Hot Stove Society Radio. You're listening to Hot Stove on the Cairo Radio Network, 97.3 FM. The show is produced by Amy Richardson, Mean Lee. Sound engineer is our Sean McFadden, and our editor is Sean, don't call me Del Torre. Remember, if you miss any episode of our Hot Stove Society show on Cairo, you can either listen via podcast, just go right to your favorite podcast app and listen there.
Thanks for listening, and have a wonderful weekend.
Yay!